Welcome to the Unconventional Dyad Podcast, where you'll find broad topics, an unconventional dyad, and one shared goal, educating ourselves through challenging and engaging conversations. Your hosts are Carly and Laura, two graduate students and friends committed to having discussions that are real, raw, and unpolished. Thank you for joining us. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Unconventional Dyad Podcast. Thanks for being with us today. We have a few exciting updates to share with all our listeners before we get into today's topic. So, Carly, why don't you get us started on some of the exciting updates?
Yeah, so we have a new website. You can also find blog posts on there that we'll be posting weekly. The website link will be in our summary or the show notes for this episode. So take a look and read what we have to say on our blog. We also have Patreon now. So if you go to patreon.com/unconventionaldyad, support us if you are liking what you're hearing, and we would love to stay connected that way. So we're hoping that we can really give you guys some interesting, you know, content, and we're hoping to have some really good discussions going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, and Patreon has different tiers as well. So you don't have to, you know, give us a ton of money if that's not possible for you. There's a $3 tier, there's a $5 tier, a couple other ones, and they come with different benefits. So you can check that out on Patreon. And then we have really taken off on all social media platforms. So we have a Twitter, we have an Instagram, Facebook page. You can find us at Unconventional Dyad. So check all that out. And we also have a few really exciting interviews coming up for future episodes. So this week, Carly and I will be having a conversation. And then following this episode, we're going to try to get some guests on the show, which we're really excited about. Mm-hmm. Do you want to share about some of those guests, Carly?
Yeah. So in a few weeks, we're going to have Carlos Padron on. So he is a psychoanalyst from New York, and he works primarily with this Hispanic population. He does a lot of bilingual psychoanalysis with individuals, and we're really excited to have him on. We're going to be talking about working with minorities, what barriers are at play there, especially for us. We both identify as white, so I'm really excited to talk to him about what his experiences are. He's originally from Venezuela. So he has some really interesting ideas, and I am thrilled to have him on.
Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a few other people too. We're not just going to be interviewing psychologists, although I'm sure we'll have a few other ones on the podcast, but we're also trying to branch out and get a few guests who are not in our field. I'm not going to name any names because I haven't confirmed all of these people yet, but we do have some social justice activists on board, a motivational speaker will potentially be coming on, some authors, musicians. So just really excited about getting people from other fields sharing what they have to teach us. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Awesome. So this week's topic, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. I've been thinking a lot about this topic and really what we want to talk about. And I found myself getting a little bit nervous talking about consent in the body. So I'm hoping that this becomes a good conversation for everyone who's listening.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to focus on consent in the age of COVID. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, Carly, what that nervousness is about for you.
I think there's a lot of different things. I think I would say about 2 months ago, I remember telling myself, I am really glad I'm not the one making the decisions to go back to class.
Yes.
Because that is a really difficult decision. I thought it was kind of a lose-lose situation. But now as I am experiencing, you know, we're going to be going back to class next week, and I just see all these other schools having a lot of difficulties keeping the cases under control. Mm-hmm. I kind of wish I was the one making the decisions, because I would probably have everyone be virtual. I feel like that's just safer right now. And I know that not everyone feels that way. So
yeah.
I think that's what makes me nervous. It's just not everyone feels that it's the best decision to do virtual classes. So.
Yeah. And not everybody's on the same page. Yeah. It's hard to kind of try to maneuver all that. especially as students. So, but yeah, I'm excited about this topic. So Carly actually brought this topic to my attention. I think we were talking just in casual conversation, you brought it up. She mentioned, you know, it kind of feels like some of the things that are going on with COVID-19 right now, they kind of feel like they're not consensual. Like there's almost, there are certain things that we are expected or required to do with our bodies in the midst of this pandemic that don't necessarily make us feel very comfortable. One of them being having to return to classes. And luckily, I think it's the case for both of us that we're doing virtual only as of right now. So that's good. But yeah, there was a whole debate for a while of whether or not people should be coming into the building, doing classes in person. And so I just thought it was such an excellent point that you made, Carly, when you said, like, there's this kind of non-consensual feel to this whole thing. And there's a lot of discomfort in terms of what is expected of us in our bodies. I'm wondering if you can share a few thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think something that got me thinking is that as a professor, I am not a professor, but if I was a professor, I wouldn't want to force any student to do something with their body that they're not okay with.
Yeah.
And as a student, I felt a little uncomfortable with that idea, but if I was someone in power, that's what I would be thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking about what we are requiring our clients and our patients to do with their bodies. Are we going to continue doing virtual therapy? Are we going to start making them do in-person therapy?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is dependent on insurance, of course, but a lot of our clients don't pay for insurance. So it got me thinking about what we're going to make our clients and our patients do a few months from now.
And actually, I mean, even now, so I know you and I are seeing our clients virtually, but I know there are people in our cohort who are seeing clients face to face. And we know people in the field who are not in our cohort, but who are, you know, mental health clinicians who are seeing people face to face. So yeah, that brings up a really interesting question of consent. So there's consent on our part, and then there has to be consent on their part as well. And that can get a little tricky.
Laura, in your experience so far, how has virtual therapy been going? Do you feel as though you're still getting a lot out of it? Do you find yourself wanting to push for in-person therapy? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I never want to push for in-person therapy. Just because I think kind of similar to what you were saying, like if I am in power when I'm the therapist in the room, and as a person in power, I would never want to, you know, cause somebody discomfort or make them afraid or feel like they have to do something with their bodies that they don't want to. So if a client expresses a desire to do in-person therapy, I am willing to explore that with them, but I am never, you know, going to push for that myself. Do I like in-person therapy better than virtual? Yes, I personally prefer it. I think I get a lot out of seeing my clients in person face-to-face. Do I also like certain things about virtual therapy? Absolutely. It's really growing on me. I'm warming up to it, and I see a lot of benefits to it that we don't really have when we're just in person. But so far for me, it's been a pretty positive experience with the clients that I've kind of maintained over time. Switching from in-person to virtual has not really been a problem. I think it's been very beneficial for everyone involved. But I have noticed I've taken on a few clients who I didn't know prior to the pandemic. So now during the pandemic, you know, I've got new clients coming in and I'm trying to make this connection with them virtually. I've never met them before in my life, you know, in person. Mm-hmm. That to me is really tricky. So that's the only challenge that I'm really struggling with right now in terms of virtual therapy, is that I don't feel the same closeness or connection to my new clients as I do to my old clients.
I feel like that a lot. I would say the majority of my caseload right now are patients or clients who I've only seen virtually. And I'm
Mm.
really curious about what that transition will look like, not only when it's going to happen, but
Yeah.
really ultimately how that relationship is going to change once we start meeting in person. I have found this is getting a little off topic, but I found that the access to care has been so much easier and better for patients. I am seeing a few patients with essentially a chronic medical condition that wouldn't be able to get to the clinic that I am currently at. So being able to talk with her over the phone has been really great. And despite me not being able to see her, despite me not being able to really kind of witness her visually, I can most definitely hear what she has to say, and that you can
Yeah.
almost feel it in I can almost feel it in my body what she's giving to me, even just verbally. So it does increase access to care.
Yes, absolutely. How do you feel about suggesting in person to patients? Are you ready for that? Do you want that?
I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
I am still very nervous about the pandemic. I've had family members get COVID. I've had people who are close to me get very, very sick, and in fact, very close to death. One of them
Yeah.
is very close to death right now. And
Mm-hmm.
to me, it's very scary. And I think something that I would like to talk about more in this episode is it's almost like if you're meeting someone, if you're in person, you almost have to trust that they've been taking care of their bodies and that
Yes.
they're being safe. I don't know if I have that level of trust with people, even if it's, classmates or coworkers. I work at Starbucks, and I'm like, I don't know how safe you've been, and I don't know if
Yeah.
I feel safe being around you, not knowing what you've been doing with your body, who you've been hanging around. And that is honestly none of my business necessarily, but it is a little bit if I end up getting sick.
Absolutely. Yeah, it kind of is in this situation. And it just, again, brings me back to consent. You want to consent knowing all the facts, right? So if you're going to consent to meeting up with somebody or, being in close quarters with someone, like you need to kind of know, like you say, it's not your business. It is and it isn't, right? And it's kind of weird because typically we don't demand that people tell us, their health status. But in this case, it's just such a unique situation. It's almost like it's a necessity.
And that leads me to another interesting idea of I have actually not been going out because I'm pretty anxious. I don't have all that great of an immune system, so I've maybe been a little bit safer than I maybe need to be.
Yeah.
But if I know that people are not safe, if I know that people are not going to be wearing masks, I will not interact with that person. And it's really been holding me back a little bit. I haven't been able to go places I really want to go. I haven't been able to do things that I really want to do because I just don't know the level of safety that I'll be in.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a good point. Yeah, I'm curious too about, I know we mentioned, clients and patients earlier. I'm curious too about, like, in a similar line of thought, therapists who are not complying with COVID-19 protocols, let's say they're not wearing masks when they're going out, or let's say they're not socially distancing, maybe they're getting together with people. I mean, we both know some people who are doing that and are seeing clients in person. So I'm curious about what you think the therapists, what their responsibility is to those patients, what kind of rights the patients have. What do you think about all that?
There's probably a very good legal answer to this, but I don't know it and I haven't found it. So if anyone happens to know any of this, please let us know so we can inform ourselves.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go off on a limb here and suggest I think it is our responsibility to keep ourselves safe, to keep our patients safe. And it sucks, right? It sucks having to go out, wear a mask, social distance, not do things that you want to do, but ultimately we are supposed to be caring for our patients. And if that patient were to get sick, I'm imagining myself being in that position, and I would feel incredibly guilty knowing that I may have been the one to give it to them, especially if
Yeah.
I were to test positive. I don't think I would be able to forgive myself for that, knowing that I infected someone without giving them consent that, I haven't been keeping myself safe. I don't That's think cool. I could live with that.
I'm with you on that. I totally agree 100%. I think we have an ethical duty. Like we always talk about, to do no harm, right? And this is part of it in my eyes. I'm also wondering too, like let's say you did happen to go to, for example, I had two weddings I had to go to this summer. Let's say I went to one of those weddings and I had scheduled prior to that a client to see in person, which this didn't happen, but hypothetical situation. Do I have a responsibility to tell that patient, hey, just so you know, this weekend I was at a gathering of 20 people. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I
Yeah.
don't know. I would venture to guess that most people would even be uncomfortable sharing their COVID status with a
Yeah.
patient. Say, for example, I were to test positive, without a doubt, I would be telling my patients, I tested positive. You
Right.
need to either get tested or quarantine for 14 days or
Right.
whatever the CDC says at the time.
Yeah. Yep.
In terms of me being potentially exposed to someone, I don't know the answer to that. I don't even know what I would do if
Yeah.
I were to be at a party, for example, or a wedding. I don't know what if I would share that with my
Yeah.
patients.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just such an interesting question. And I just wonder, at that point, I think what I would choose to do is just not see people in person, which is what I'm doing, right? But I do, like we said, we do know people who are seeing individuals in person. And so I'm curious what, the rights and responsibilities are there. Yeah.
Say, for example, Laura, you maybe tested positive and you were doing in-person therapy. Say, for example, you were at a VA or you were at a hospital-based setting. How forthcoming would you be with your status, with your COVID status? How, like, who would you contact? Who would you tell? What responsibility do you have to actually tell your patients? Tell your supervisors, tell people, coworkers.
Yeah, so this is if I do test positive. Oh, I would absolutely. I think I would tell everyone. I mean, that's just me. I would want to be open. And I think it's only fair, I think about this a lot. I kind of think about how right now the collective to me is a little more important than the individual. And so whether or not I'm comfortable or uncomfortable or whatever is going on inside me, to me is not as important in this moment, in this present time, as the safety and the well-being of the collective is. So that's how I look at it. Like I definitely think, I'd be telling my supervisors, I'd be telling my patients, I would stay home. I'd tell any friends that I came in contact with. I just feel like that's my responsibility in that instance.
I agree with that. I think we're both thinking very similarly here in terms of protecting the collective.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that that is the right thing, but I do think it's the ethical thing.
Right.
And I, not ethical in terms of the APA, I think it does apply to that, but also just ethical as being a human being and being
Yes.
someone who could potentially infect other people.
Right.
I think we do have a responsibility to keep each other safe and keep ourselves safe. So I think it kind of goes beyond what
Yes.
we're, it kind of goes beyond that ethical responsibility of being a psychologist or being a mental health professional.
Yes. Yeah,
Goes
and
beyond
that's
that.
exactly how I'm thinking about it too. Yeah, it's not really, I'm not just thinking about myself as a psychologist. I'm thinking about myself as a human being in this world. So yeah, I totally agree with that. But the truth is, a lot of people don't see it that way. I've spoken to even family members who do not see, the collective as being that important right now. Their mindset is more of, if I get it, I get it. If they get it, they get it. It is what it is, kind of a mentality. So yeah, I mean, there's differing views on that.
I think what I've done, I also have family members, and my community back where I grew up is very much like that. I think people are very reluctant to wear a mask to be safe. What I have really done, and I don't necessarily think this is the good thing to do, I've really distanced myself from that community and from those people. I think this is just something that is very difficult to talk about because I feel so strongly with safe. I feel so strongly about keeping myself safe and other people safe, and I think people have a difficult time really understanding that. So I'm like, you know what? When COVID is over, we'll start talking again. We'll start interacting again. In the meantime, I think we just have to agree to disagree here and just go from there. It's been really difficult to communicate with people about this, to interact with people who are maybe not have maybe don't have the similar thoughts and views that I do.
Well, and it sounds like right now it's just not productive to engage in that conversation. And I like your idea of coming back to it once the pandemic kind of dies down, because you're not ignoring the issue, you're not sweeping it under the rug, you're coming back to it, but you're coming back to it at a time when it can be a more productive conversation, when maybe emotions and fears aren't running as high.
Laura, another question I have that I want to bring up is the idea of supervision. And we as students are in a relationship with a supervisor who has an incredible amount of power. They are able to give us grades for classes. They're able to really assess us and ultimately maybe have an effect on our future. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about what the supervisor's role is and if the values don't align, what to do next.
Do you mean their role in this COVID era?
In terms of if they're wanting you to do something that you don't feel safe doing, that you don't feel comfortable doing, what then? What happens then?
See, that is so hard because we have multiple relationships with our supervisors, at least the ones at our school, right? Because they're very involved in the community. Like you said, they can give us grades. They might be our supervisor for, clients we see at school and for patients in whatever practice they're at. Maybe you're working for them. Maybe, you're interacting with them in the community. I think that's so hard. I think if I was the supervisor, I think I'd be very mindful of my power in the relationship. I would check in with my supervisees constantly. I would let them kind of, lead the way and make the call in terms of what they're comfortable with, what they're not comfortable with. I wouldn't want to ask them to do anything that they might be potentially fearful of. I actually had a supervisor at one of my practicum sites. She was exactly like that. And it was so nice to feel so valued and so taken care of. Like she made sure, she told me, you decide what you want to do. I'm not going to push you either way. If you don't want to come into the office, stay home. I would prefer that you stay home, actually. That's what she told me. And so I did all of my clients from, I saw all of my clients from home. And that was just such a huge relief, such a weight off my shoulders. So I think if I was a supervisor, I would try to do that. I think as a student, it's a little trickier, because we don't have that power in the relationship. And yeah, I don't know. It's scary because you don't want to say or do something that could potentially jeopardize that relationship. Like if you say no to a supervisor who's asking you to come in and see patients in person, what kind of consequences does that have? Does that impact whether or not they're going to write you a letter of recommendation for internship? Whether or not you're going to get a good professionalism score on your, report card, quote unquote. It's just, I feel like there's so many ramifications. What, how do you feel about it? What are your thoughts on this issue?
I think my thoughts are a lot stronger than what I would actually do. I feel very strongly about this. I feel very strongly about the power to say no as a supervisee. However, if it's actually going to happen, and I've been very fortunate with supervisors being very student-centered, actually, in fact, they themselves have been very safe. And I have not run into this. However, I can imagine myself running into this and saying, yes, I will do in person. Because ultimately, what I've been thinking about a lot is re letters of recommendations, future scholarships, whatever it might be. And I am one of those people who are inclined to do things to get me to kind of the next I don't even know what you want to call it.
Yeah.
The next level of my life, the next level of my career. I'm willing to say yes in most situations in terms of my academic career.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine that being a very difficult conversation, despite me having very strong beliefs about it. I would probably put them aside and say, yes, I will do in-person therapy or in-person assessments, despite me feeling very uncomfortable about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I totally relate to that. And in spite of me relating to that, I still feel yucky about that. Like, I'm exactly the same. I'm constantly thinking, okay, if I say no to this person, not that I'm, you know, looking at my relationships in a transactional manner, but you can't help but, you know, as a student, think about what does this mean for my career and my future? Like, I obviously don't want to burn any bridges, right? Yeah, although I do the same exact thing as you, Carly, I still feel a little yucky about the fact that that's the reality that we live in.
Something else I've been thinking about too is, you know, for people who have difficulties with boundaries in general, and I think we all to some extent struggle with boundaries. I think for me, when I do things that I don't want to do or that I don't feel comfortable doing, I'll most likely resent that person for forcing that upon me. Despite me having the ability to say no, if I say yes, I will likely hold that against them in some way in a form of resentment or whatever it might be. And that's something I really need to work on a little bit more. I really need to work on, you know, if you do say yes, ultimately you have to be okay with that decision.
Right.
However, if it's a power dynamic, I will likely end up resenting that person.
Yes.
And that's something I'm going to have to work through, which I have in most situations, but I do feel a little bit of resentment. Like, why are you asking me to do something that I don't feel comfortable doing? But ultimately I never communicated that with them. So how would they know?
Well, yeah, but it's again, that power differential makes it really difficult sometimes to communicate that. Like, I know we've both had supervisors who are very, you know, compassionate and understanding, and we got very lucky with that. And so that's nice when it happens. But then when that's not the case and you don't feel as, you know, I would feel very comfortable communicating that with a supervisor who I've known for a while, who's I know is an understanding person and is compassionate. I'd feel comfortable letting them know, hey, this actually, you know, I don't feel great about this. I wonder if there's some other way that we can work this out. That's fine. But what happens when you don't have that relationship with a supervisor, or you're not as close, or maybe the supervisor just isn't really, you know, as understanding as somebody else? It's just, yeah, it's so hard. And I totally agree. I think I have in the past from experience ended up resenting people for that. But your point is well taken. If you say yes, you kind of have to be okay with that yes. And if you say no, you have to be okay with that no. It's just things are a little more complicated when there's power dynamics at play.
Something I've been thinking about too, I was employed by a psychologist who I ultimately ended up leaving that position because I didn't feel safe. There was some unethical things happening, and I ended up getting out of that position, and in fact it was used against me. So that is something that I think about a lot too, is, you know, especially if you're in a smaller community and you do end up putting a boundary up in that relationship, how it can be used against you. And that's something that I really need to reflect more on, especially if I do become a supervisor one day or a boss of someone. I really need to think about that relationship, what that relationship means, how to keep both of us safe, both of us continually doing ethical practice. So it has happened to me in the past, having things used against me, and that is always on my mind. Is that going to happen again? In what way is me saying no going to be used against me?
Yeah. So this isn't just an abstract fear. This is something that you actually went through. Yeah. And that makes it even scarier to set up those boundaries and to respect your own boundaries. Yeah. No, I've had similar experiences too with people in power, drawing a line and then being really fearful like that's going to be used against me. Luckily that hasn't happened to me yet, but the potential is always there. Right. Yeah. So I know we have like a Google Doc where we write some of our thoughts and ideas about the podcast in. And I just want to point to one that you wrote in. You mentioned institutions and if whether or not institutions should require in-person participation if consent isn't explicitly given. For example, if we have, you know, a graduate school program saying we're going to do in-person classes, should they require some sort of like consent to be given? I'm almost thinking of maybe like a contract being drawn up or something. You know, do we need to get explicit consent from students to come back into school? Or is it okay just to say, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's, you know, we're doing in-person classes and take it or leave it kind of thing.
I think the reason I put that question on there was because I don't know the answer and I'm really curious to talk about it. I think we really have to be mindful of people's health statuses.
Yeah.
We are not required as students to provide any health status to the institution. So for example, your HIV status, whether you have MS, whether you have some other autoimmune, anything that can affect your body or immune system, we are not, it is not required to provide that to the school.
Yeah.
So if you did have one of those ailments, say for example, you are HIV positive and you don't sign the consent, what happens then?
Right.
What happens to you as a student? What happens to you in terms of your professionalism?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer because our school doesn't do that.
Right.
But I do know of universities that did have, you have to sign something saying that you could potentially get sick and we are not held liable for you getting sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that institutions were actually doing that, but it seems, in theory, it seems like a good idea. I mean, I don't know how well it works in practice. Like, do people actually feel like they can speak their minds or sign or not sign? But yeah, it's interesting because it's almost like if an institution decides to just have in-person classes and they say, this is it, it's the end all be all, take it or leave it, then it's almost up to the students who are uncomfortable to speak up. And at that point, you're already feeling uncomfortable, right? What are the chances that you're going to actually speak up and set those boundaries for yourself? I think they're very slim. But if you do it the other way around, where you're saying, like, you can opt in to do in-person sessions and you can consent to that, you know, I think that makes it a little easier on the student body. And I'm just so grateful that our school is going virtual because then we don't even have to worry about this issue. So I'm really thankful for that. But I'm just, I'm thinking about all the other students, other grad students, other undergraduate students who are having to show up for in-person classes and how difficult that must be.
Mm-hmm. I've been following quite a few academics on Twitter and they're talking a lot about being required to get back to the lab, continuing their research.
Yeah.
Their funding is dependent on if they show up.
Yes.
And it's such a difficult position to be in. And I mean, we've never been in this position before, at least in several decades. So it's just so new. And I guess the first time I heard that, I'm like, how can you force someone to go into an unsafe environment? Yet there is they did sign a contract. They are contracted for a year of funding. So it's just a really difficult situation. I have my beliefs about that, but ultimately, I mean, my beliefs, they don't really matter. The institutions have the right to withhold funding, I guess.
Right. And that makes me really sad too, because I think a lot of things in our society are kind of reduced to money. It's like at the end, you know, when you look at, for example, like you said, having to return to labs to do research, at the end of the day, it's about money, right? And you're kind of risking people's lives for money. Same with the economy being shut down right now, not shut down, but the economy suffering right now. Same thing there. You know, we want to reopen things because we're worried about money ultimately. And it makes sense because it's what's keeping us, you know, like we need money to pay our rent. We need money to pay our food. But it saddens me that that's what, you know, this is about at its root, is about whether or not we can make money, whether or not we can produce, we can get products out there. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. When you think of universities, they make a lot of money if the students are on campus. If you're doing virtual classes, the money is not coming in at the pace that it was before, right? You aren't getting the money for the dorm rooms. You aren't getting money for anything that the students are doing in person. So that I get. I really do get that. But it's this interesting dynamic where you are putting students into an unsafe environment and you're also taking their money.
Yes, that is so interesting. Yeah, and even like sports too and athletics. Like I went to UW-Madison for my undergrad, and that was a huge money maker, right? Our football team, our basketball team. So again, yeah, that's such a good point. You're not only putting people's lives at risk, you're also demanding that they pay you. Yeah, it's an interesting concept for sure. Yeah. I'm also curious too about consent when it comes to practicum and placements or our training. And we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but it's just interesting to me because as graduate students who are also in practicums and in training, like we're not really employees. We don't really have employee benefits. We don't have employee rights in the same way that people who are actually working for those organizations do. I'm curious about your thoughts in terms of like what rights we have as students who are training. Luckily we don't have to go in to a lot of the places that we're practicum students at. But a lot of people do. What are your thoughts about that?
I kind of get a little bit of a discomfort in my body when I'm even thinking about it. I feel as though practicum students, we don't get paid. Most of us don't, at least. Most of
No.
us don't get paid. Really, the only thing we're getting out of it is the supervision and also the hours, the
Yes.
accumulated hours for internship. Essentially, those are the two things. And we're learning along the way, right? That's part of the supervision.
Right.
So it's not quite an exchange. I feel like we are definitely in disempowered in that relationship. I feel as though we don't have a lot of rights. So ultimately, I don't know what can be done if you're a practicum student and if you're feeling unsafe. Because ultimately, if you don't end up going in, you aren't going to pick up the hours and you aren't going to get the experience that you need for internship.
Right.
I don't know what the practicum site would be missing. They're going to be missing, obviously, you do providing services for them, but ultimately, I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I don't either, which is why I asked you. I'm curious about your thoughts because of that. I mean, yeah, technically we don't have to sign any sort of contract. At least we haven't had to when we start a practicum placement at an organization. But when you said like I don't know what the practicum sites are missing, I'm thinking about even one of the sites that I was at. They don't pay me to be a practicum student there, but they get government funding based off of the number of patients that are seen and the kind of services we provide. And a huge majority of the services that they provide, because they're, a nonprofit and they're a government agency, they rely on practicum students to get their funding in. So it's just an interesting question to consider.
It's kind of icky, isn't it?
It is.
It's an icky idea. It's makes me very uncomfortable to talk about because ultimately we need practicum hours.
Oh,
It is
yeah.
something that we need. We cannot go to internship. We cannot graduate without those hours.
Right.
And in the age of COVID, that leaves us in a really interesting position. We're both fortunate in that we have enough hours to go on to internship right now, but a lot of students don't, and they
Right.
are almost need to be in person,
Right.
regardless of if they feel safe or not.
Right.
It's almost a requirement, and they cannot say no.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and even like I'm even thinking, what happens if you, let's say one of us was doing this placement and then COVID happened and they're requiring us to go in person, we don't feel safe. We say no and we tell them, actually I want to, I want to end this placement early. That wasn't what we agreed on when I interviewed for this position, but I don't feel safe anymore and I want to end this placement. Then what happens again, thinking about your future and your career, what happens down the line if you've kind of severed ties and burned bridges with this whole organization? What kind of impacts does that have on you? And I know some people who have done that, not because of COVID, but just in general, some people who just felt like it wasn't a good fit, that site wasn't a good fit for them, and they cut ties. And it was a huge deal. It was not comfortable. It was not good, you know? So yeah, it's just, there's so much to consider there.
Interestingly enough, I was at a university setting last year and the entire counseling center closed down. So I didn't, not only was I not doing any therapy there, mm-hmm. but none of the therapists, none of the mental health professionals, none of the psychologists were doing any therapy. Mm-hmm. So that was a situation where everyone was not participating. It wasn't just me. It was everyone yes. on the staff.
Yeah.
But if they were to still do in person and I would have to be there, that would be a really mm-hmm. tough, because I actually did sign a contract.
Oh, you did?
I did sign a contract. It was, I think, a 9-month contract.
Okay.
There were some there were ways that you could break the contract, I guess you can say. But I mean, obviously COVID wasn't one of them, because right. we had no idea this was going to be an issue. So what happens then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, so I guess some places do require a contract. I've never had to sign one, which I feel very lucky and fortunate. But yeah, interesting stuff. Well, any other thoughts, Carly, on this topic of consent in the age of COVID?
I can't really think of anything. I did write a blog post recently about harmful supervision. So maybe in the okay. future we can do a episode on supervision experiences, the power dynamic within supervision. I thought it kind of touched a little bit on what we were talking about today, but
yes.
I think there's enough there to create its own episode. So
oh yeah.
I think it would be really good to dive into that a little bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah. By the way, listeners, that blog post is great. It's excellent. You should definitely check it out and read it. I related to so much of what you were talking about in that blog post, Carly. And I totally agree. I think it's a topic that deserves its own episode. And I'm sure it'll come up again. So I look forward to that whenever we decide to do that episode.
Great.
Awesome.
Well, that is all for today. And we will keep you guys updated on guests that we're going to be having. We are absolutely thrilled where this podcast is going, and we really hope that you're enjoying what you're hearing. And let us know what you guys think. Rate us on Apple Podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts now, so go ahead and rate us on there. You can yes. listen to us on Spotify, on Anchor. We're also on YouTube, so go ahead and check us out.
Yeah, subscribe too, if you don't mind. Subscribe, rate, review. We'd love your feedback. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to reach out to us, maybe send us a message or an email. Should we give our listeners our email if anybody has questions or comments?
Yeah, so it's unconventionaldyad@gmail.com. And yeah, you can reach us that way. You can also reach us on any of our social media platforms or on YouTube. Everything is connected, so feel free to reach out to us on any of those platforms.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you everyone for being with us today. Thanks for your listenership. We really appreciate it. And we will be back soon with more episodes. Poetry is written by